June is almost upon us. Pride Month.
Oh, yeah.
Is almost upon us.
More like Sin Month.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And you know what that means when it comes to Pride Month. It means conservatives are going to complain for the entire month, for 30 days. That's all we're going
to
get.
30 whole days. Because, I mean, to be fair, they get a whole month, but the troops get what, a day?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, last year, or on the same time, into June, of course, we got lots of counter-protests.
Yeah.
We got direct protests. We got a little bit of stochastic terrorism. Even as a treat, some domestic terrorism.
Yes.
And we're likely going to see that happen
on,
again.
On, like, the first day, we got crazy legislation.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So. We had people getting arrested outside of Pride events, potentially trying to incite violence, of course. We're likely going to see this happen again.
The Proud Boys, right?
Something like that.
Or it was one of those crazy white-ring groups that got caught in vans with a bunch of shit.
So we might see that again. And we're also, of course, and we have been seeing boycotts.
Yeah.
And specifically, all of this is kind of culminating into the Target boycott, quote-unquote, that's attempted, that conservatives are attempting to do right now. They're mad at Target because they're selling clothes that have rainbows on them. And to conservatives, this is tantamount to grooming somehow. And the claim has also been that they're selling, like, bathing suits that are for children to, quote unquote, tuck in, which of course is not happening.
Yeah, that's the big one that's been happening, right? Is it's been going viral, that one, like, rainbow bathing suit that has a tag that says tuck friendly construction. That's it.
But it's not.
That's
like,
it. And they're saying that it's being marketed towards kids.
That's how this whole thing started off.
Yep.
Was some lady went into Target and said, like, this is for kids. Clearly isn't for kids.
It literally isn't for kids.
It's gotten to a point where conservatives like Matt Walsh, of course, and all the other demons that populate the internet nowadays will find like a piece of rainbow clothing. They'll post it on their social media. It'll be like slides or something that you'd wear to the beach that have a rainbow across where your foot goes. And they said, this is grooming, or this is shoving it down our throats. You have people that are now walking into Target, harassing customers, harassing people that work there, stomping on merchandise, stomping on signs that say like, be proud or something like that.
Yeah.
Like we're getting to a point where
it's like going to Target is like the modern day Normandy.
They're storming the beaches of Normandy.
The brave conservative patriots are storming the beaches of Target to take down this Pride merchandise that's indoctrinating your kids.
So in all seriousness, though, the Target stock has gone down a little bit.
Yeah.
But of course, correlation isn't causation. You can't
directly attribute
it to them.
And it's also a stock that's been fluctuating for a while.
And it's also, if you look at the stock of other supermarkets in the United States, of which there's like, what, four others?
Yeah.
Because, you know, capitalism. they're also dipping a little bit. It's just, it could have something to do with the impending Armageddon that our country's about to go into.
It could have had something to do with the debt ceiling, maybe.
Yeah, so we're seeing conservatives react in a sort of way where it's just like harassing people and getting on the border of domestic terror, because we have corporations like Target right now specifically sending out warnings to their employees that you need to be safe because people are coming in and harassing others, especially in red states. So I mean, this is kind of like the right-wing message right now. This is kind of the point of their campaign, is doing actual violence to people, which is kind of crazy.
Who are just doing their jobs.
To corporations,
like,
right?
Just working, going to work, clocking in every day.
And an interesting thing that I think we all need to pay attention to is, especially during June, especially this year, because we've gotten to a point, kind of past the point of no return for the conservative hate campaign against the LGBTQ. A thing that we need to pay attention to is if corporations actually stick by the side of the LGBTQ as they claim to want to do with their marketing, or if they're going to back off, kind of like Target has already.
Yeah, they're pulling their Pride merchandise from select stores, citing like threats of like violence or like fears of harassment against their staff.
And on its face, you might think that makes sense.
Yeah.
But when you look a little bit deeper, it's kind of funny almost, because Target dedicates hundreds of millions of dollars every year to their anti-theft operation, but suddenly can't do anything about a small select portion of the population barging into their stores and destroying stuff and harassing their employees.
Yeah.
And stuff. Like, I know you can do something about it.
Like,
and the fact
that
they're folding
this
easy.
Up security at those stores and just kick those people out that were harassed. Like, have a zero tolerance policy for the harassment. You could do something like that. You don't have to turn your back on the community that you're trying to profit off of with this whole promotion anyway.
So I think an important thing to pay attention to is how many corporations actually stick around the LGBTQ during June and onward as well. Because you might make an argument that it's easiest to do in June because it's Pride Month.
Yeah.
But perhaps we'll see what they do outside of June. Some corporations have already kind of folded, like Bud Light kind of folded a little bit.
Oh, Bud Light
with the
folded,
whole
for sure.
Dylan Mulvaney thing throughout April and May. And we'll see what Target's already folding a little bit. We'll see what other corporations do. But it is that time of the year.
You know,
conservatives are going to be insufferable.
They are. They're storming the beaches of Target, ready to fight. You know, they're culture warriors.
It's a war.
Yeah.
It's a war.
It's a war, and they're fighting against rainbow slides.
Yeah, no, it's a very serious political ideology. T-shirts grooming children, and T-shirts, that is kind children. Of the mortal threat against Western civilization.
And it's like, goddamn, it's just crazy how they just, one, lied about that whole issue, and then just got, like, now everybody thinks that those things are for kids. And it's like, I guess hot take, even if it was, like, no kid is going to say, oh, yeah, tuck-friendly construction, I'm gonna be trans now.
They don't know what that means.
Exactly. Like, oh, I'm going to be trans now.
Well, it's like, that's not happening. Also, like, if a kid goes in and wants to buy a rainbow shirt that says, like pride or something on or just has a rainbow, who, like, why does it matter, right?
Even worst case, like, it says, like, light binding effect.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, they don't know what it fucking means.
Especially that, because it's like, corporations nowadays only promote pride so much because they know they can sell it, right? Mm-hmm. They can put it on t-shirts and they can sell it as a sort of marketing scheme. This is the same thing, by the way, that happened with advertising companies when they started to put like black people or people that aren't super duper skinny into their advertising. Yeah. Conservatives freaked out about it, said it was the decline of Western civilization.
Well, they still freak out about
exactly.
it. Every time someone who doesn't fit like a beauty standard is on like a magazine cover, Jordan Peterson freaks out.
Yeah, but what corporations realize is that Americans look very different, and people that don't look exactly like who they're marketing to also have money to spend.
Yeah.
So of course they're going to market to the LGBTQ, to black people, to people that aren't super duper skinny and don't fit like the standard beauty stereotype that everyone's been used to for all of U.S. history. Of course that's what they're gonna do. They want to make money.
And it's like, even with the binding thing, you don't even have to be like trans to just want something to have a binding effect. You don't need to be trans just want something to not have your titties out. Like sports bras are a little binding. Like, nobody bitches about that.
It's clothing.
It's not advertised as such. It's just clothing. It's just a thing that you may want in a certain circumstance.
Yeah,
like it doesn't have to be gay, you know what I'm saying?
This is what conservatives are focusing on right now. This is their
it is.
I don't know, their white whale, I guess, the one thing that they're trying to, like, I don't know what else they support at the moment other than like destroying Pride Month.
Yeah, I guess they support total economic collapse.
Yeah.
The anti-rainbow slides.
It is crazy. You'll see later on in the episode when we talk about Minnesota, but we got some states that are literally reviving Karl Marx, bringing him back from the grave so that they can pass their legislation. Just some of the greatest things that we've seen in quite a long while out of this country. And then we got conservatives who are, what, promising to annihilate the first gay person they see in June? Like, yeah. What are we doing?
It's nuts. It's the absolute state of this country is something to behold.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Maybe it'll collapse soon.
Yeah, maybe we'll make it 5 days into June. And then
it's over.
Way bigger things to worry
And they'll
about.
Blame it on the LGBTQ, I guarantee you.
Welcome back to the show, everybody.
Welcome back to Head in the Office. We got a lot to talk about today.
Yes, we do. A lot of news just hit all of a sudden this weekend. Pretty crazy stuff. We're going to start off with talks about the debt ceiling.
Yep.
You already know. Then we got to talk about our boy,
Ron
our boy
DeSantis.
Meatball Ron, Car Seat Ron, Booster Seat Ron, whatever 5'7" you want to call
Ron.
Him.
Little
short,
boy,
little,
D,
tiny
little
boy,
D.
I could fit him in my pocket, Ron.
Yeah, Ron is sanctimonious, putting fingers, Ron.
Rob.
There's Rob.
My guy, Rob.
There's lots of names for him, but we got to talk about that. Got to talk about the election, of course. We
Absolutely.
Got some abortion bills we got to cover out of the Carolinas this week.
Oh, goodness gracious.
A little segment that was asked for by a couple of viewers that we have. So shout out to you, or I'm sorry, I guess. We'll talk about Minnesota, as alluded to, because they're literally communists now. And we'll wrap it up there. And next week,
maybe tease a story that we'll be talking about in the coming weeks of a little guy out of Texas getting impeached.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
And it's episode 99 today. See,
it's episode 100 is right around the corner.
It's pretty exciting. I got a little confused. I thought it was going to be episode 100 today. I was wrong. It's 99
word,
today.
Okay.
But episode 100 right around the corner. Who knows what's going to happen?
Episode 100 next week on what, May 31st?
Well, May 31st is when this episode comes out.
Oh, 99. Never mind. Yeah. Oh, next week on, then what is it, like June 7th?
Something like that, yeah.
What a better way to celebrate the 100th episode.
The beginning of Armageddon.
Than the beginning of Armageddon. Maybe the 100th episode will be over ham radio.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Maybe we'll start a radio show because that's the only way you're going to be able to get content.
Yeah. For the first industry to go is going to be Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
Yeah,
the streaming podcasts are the streaming platforms are going to be what goes first.
You know what? My market, basically. what I have expertise in. So we're switching over to radio, possibly.
Yeah.
Preparing the infrastructure for that.
If you want to help prepare us for the incoming collapse, though, you can become a patron on patreon.com/headintheofficepod. That's where we let all of our content go early.
That's right.
That's who gets the updates first. That's who we interact with the most. We just did a live stream, talked to some of the patrons on live. That was a lot of fun. Thank you all.
That
for,
was a great time.
For coming
out. Shout
out
to everyone that came out to the live stream, patron or not.
Speaking of us doing a live stream, we were on YouTube. You can subscribe to us on YouTube. We're getting close to 2,000 subscribers, which is kind of huge.
That's crazy.
Kind of huge.
I fuck with that.
Yeah. You can also follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Discord. It's all in the description. You know exactly what to look for. And if you want to support us in a free way.
Completely free.
Completely free.
No
we,
charge.
We literally get down on our knees every single day. And we beg. You plead for you to leave us a review on Apple so that we can read it on the show.
And this week. We got one.
We got just one.
Got one on Apple, one on Instagram.
I'm not disappointed in you guys. What the fuck? But I know there's just one of you that haven't left a review. So what are we doing? But our one and only review is by Sid and Taylor, 10 out of 10, fave political podcast. They say, not going to lie, I was convinced to write this review after seeing y'all's faces on Instagram and being absolutely shocked how y'all look, not in a bad way, and whose voice was whose. Jeremy kind of reminds me of the brother from Good Luck Charlie, so I expected him to have Gage's voice.
Gabe?
Anyways, Gabe Duncan. That's
Gabe
me, apparently.
Duncan. Gabe or PJ? That's
yeah, one of the two. I'm guessing it's Gabe. I get that sometimes. Anyway, this is an absolute banger of a podcast. I've been looking for a good podcast for political podcast that doesn't leave me depressed at the end of each episode and keeps me entertained, and y'all have done both, so thank you sincerely, listener from Texas.
Let's go. And then we got one Instagram review coming in from Jake. I'm hoping this is where I'm supposed to leave this review. I've been listening to you beautiful boys for about a year and a half, and Hitto has become my go-to place for geopolitical news, as it should be. I'm a self-described Monday maniac. I listen at work and the Patreon releases after I clock out, and I've thoroughly enjoyed living, laughing, and loving the show while committing time theft, as you should. I live in Hell on Earth, aka Greenville, South Carolina. Topical.
Oh, wow.
Very topical.
Yeah.
And this show is a great reprieve from the reactionary wasteland I call home. Thank you, boys, for keeping me somewhat sane. I can't wait to see what's in store for the future. Me too.
Thank you for those amazing reviews. If you want to have your review read, you know where to go. You can send it to us on Instagram if you don't have access
absolutely
to Apple Podcasts.
Need to.
Or you can do both, you know, gas us up a little bit. Who knows?
Compliment me.
I think we got to talk about the first thing on the agenda today, which is the debt ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
After big threatening to tank the global economy for the last month or so, 2 months or however it's been, or really last like 2 years.
Yeah.
Republicans have seemingly come to a deal with Joe Biden, but all is not as well as you may think.
So. Yeah. So basically, late Saturday night, it was announced that Biden and McCarthy finally reached a tentative deal to raise the debt limit. But while those two came in agreement, we're not totally in the clear yet, as Congress still has to vote on it to avoid a default.
Yep.
Details with that later. But for now, let's just go over what's in the bill.
Yep.
You know, this is just as of Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Things are still coming out. Nothing's really official yet. The bill is actively being written. But what we know as of, I don't know, 2:43 p.m. on Sunday.
Exact time.
Is that the deal is going to raise the debt ceiling for 2 years past the 2024 election. So this isn't going to be talked about during like that. Well, it'll probably be talked about, but it's not going to be one of those topical policy issues that they're going to have to debate over.
The main point is that Joe Biden won't have to be dealing with negotiations at the same time that he's running for president.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it would be a pretty bad thing, both optically and economically, of course, for the economy to collapse at the same time Joe Biden's running for re-election.
Yeah.
So that's like fine.
A little bit of an unfair thing when it comes to the election. But anyway, so overall, discretionary spending is going to be capped at 2023 levels for 2024, and it will be increased by 1% in 2025. Mm-hmm. Notably, military spending is excluded.
Yes.
So the Pentagon budget will increase like it always does. You know, people always say that there are only two things that are certain, death and taxes, but I'm going to have to add a third.
Going to have to.
And that's the Pentagon budget inflating year over year.
Despite the Pentagon losing billions of dollars pretty normally at this point, like consistently
despite
just losing money, failing audits,
charging the Pentagon like $1,000 for nuts and bolts.
Yeah. Failing audits regularly. Yeah, isn't it interesting how every time we have a sort of budget crisis or budget talks negotiations going on where maybe the government's going to shut down, maybe the country's going to or maybe the debt's going to, we're going to hit the debt ceiling and the country's going to collapse. The military spending's never on the chopping block.
Never.
It's never discussed as something that should go down. There's never majority support for decreasing the military
budget. Never even just capped.
Despite us spending more than the next, what, 8 countries combined on military spending, despite the fact that we could cut it in half and still spend more than every country on the planet, It's never on the chopping
even
block.
Even despite that, we never just have discussions over like, you know what, maybe this is a good number. Yeah. Maybe this is a good number for the budget. Maybe we'll just cap it right here.
Yeah.
Even though we know that different offices within the military will use everything they have in the budget just so that they can get an increase, because that's what you do when you have budgets.
Does this also mean that Ukraine's still going to be getting money? Because that's a big conservative thing right now. They'll be like, we're giving Ukraine all this money despite never fixing our roads and healthcare system, and then they always vote to not fix our roads or healthcare system.
I don't know. I'd imagine that's probably going to get scaled back. I mean,
it's defense spending though, right?
Is it?
It's aid.
Is that a part of like the Pentagon budget?
I would think so.
Oh, that's
maybe it's
crazy.
Not. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
That's
but I also
crazy.
I want to make a note that when they say discretionary spending is going to be capped at 2023 levels, that is a cut, right? Because
yep.
inflation increases every year, which means things are going to be more expensive. So if you don't increase money to match that inflation, you have less buying power, so less things can get
government's
purchased.
Purchasing power is going down next year and only
exactly.
increasing by 1% in 2025, which
yeah.
is like even a bigger cut
yeah.
than it will be for 2024 because inflation increases by more than 1% every
exactly,
year.
Exactly, right.
So the 2025 budget is, their purchasing power is going to be less than what it is
so
now.
So it amounts to a cut, yeah.
Yeah, they're also raking in like unspent COVID money
yeah.
that they like sent out to states, which is fine. Like
yeah,
I totally
fine with
get that,
that
one because it's unspent money. It's not being used for
I feel
anything.
Like it's got to be mostly red states that didn't use it, right?
I would probably think.
Yeah.
I think because there was a thing where like a bunch of red states didn't use their COVID money because they refused to help people.
That's the classic red state thing to do is like when we dispense money for like a welfare program or Medicaid, Medicare,
yeah.
they just don't use it because they don't
look,
want
it
to.
Doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so that's how that goes. The big thing that conservatives won in this round of negotiations is they got the tougher work requirements for
yeah.
temporary assistance for needy families and SNAP.
Yeah, TANF, yeah.
Yep. So while we aren't sure exactly what these will be, we can assume they're going to increase the age of those who can would get SNAP with the old requirements from 50 to 56. So previously,
yeah.
if you were like, I think it's 18 to 50, an able-bodied adult with no dependents, you had to work at least 20 hours a week or be doing mm-hmm. work-related activities for 20 hours a week, whether that be job training or whatever, in order to qualify for TAM for SNAP.
Yeah.
Now they're going to increase that top age from 50 to 56. We covered it. I want to say last week or
okay.
2 weeks ago.
Something like that.
And that's effectively going to kick about 270,000 people
yeah.
off of benefits.
Yeah.
Unless they adhere to the new requirements. One thing that may be a silver lining is that we got extensions for exemptions for veterans and homeless people
mm-hmm.
for these benefits. So maybe we're just trading one group for another
yeah.
and who gets benefits. But that's kind of fucked that we're just trading whether or not people can eat.
Yeah, and we don't have the exact details of this plan yet, but some people are predicting it's a net increase in number of people who are on welfare programs, which is like, I guess a good thing.
Yeah.
Like again, we don't want to trade group for group. But also like, at the same time, that 270,000 number or whatever, I would guess is a pretty conservative estimate because it's probably just including the number of people that are within that age range that are now going to have to work that perhaps aren't
yeah.
working because they under the old system wouldn't need to. But there's also going to be an enormous amount of people because most people on welfare are already working 90-some percent.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be a big number of people that get kicked off and then don't reapply because they don't know what changed. They don't know they're ineligible. They don't know if they're eligible or not.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be a big chunk of people. Like, we're just needlessly making it more confusing.
Oh, no. And that's a big criticism that this is needlessly cruel. And
yeah,
I want to make it a point to say that this really has nothing to do with the budget, right? Matt Windiger, a senior fellow at the conservative think tank American Enterprise Institute, had this to say about the work requirements. He said, quote, "There's not large budget savings attached to this. It boils more down to the question of should individuals be expected to do anything in exchange for benefits?" And that's consistent with what McCarthy said last night when he said, quote, "These work requirements will lift Americans out of poverty and into the workforce."
Actually, it will put them in the workforce, but out of poverty, that's a stretch.
Yeah,
that's a stretch.
Absolute, which is crazy because they're just admitting this has nothing to do with the budget.
Right.
So that makes me think, why would Joe Biden even capitulate to these demands? There was no reason. There's
yeah.
absolutely no reason when they're citing budgetary reasons. This is so that conservatives have another thing to talk about within their like culture war narratives.
Mm-hmm.
It's so that they can turn around and say, and look it, we're putting a stop to welfare queens and all these people that are abusing the welfare system.
Yeah.
You just gave them a talking point.
Which is crazy because like plenty of people that are on welfare do vote for Republicans. You're
yeah.
just hurting those constituents. Like it's not an insignificant portion of people that are on these same welfare programs.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be hurt by this Republican deal if it is to go through. And on top of that, if we're talking about like reducing the budget, obviously this is not going to be significant
yeah.
in reducing the
it's
national deficit
matter.
That we have. And I'm sure you have the this later on, but the way, of course, that you reduce the deficit, if you're really interested in that, is by raising taxes and reducing military spending. Yep. Those raising are the biggest taxes, hindrances.
Reducing government spending just in general. Right. And speaking of taxes, there are no tax increases as a part of the deal. And on the topic of tax increases, Biden originally wanted to work to close tax loopholes, not add new taxes.
Right. Get rid
he
of things that aren't supposed to
be. Close loopholes that you shouldn't be able to take advantage of to increase revenue. The conservatives said no.
Loopholes, like, definitionally aren't supposed to be there. Yeah. You know what
definitionally,
I mean?
Like, should be illegal, but there's just, like, I don't know, some weird
you missed a
thing
point,
in
right?
The law. You missed a point when you were writing legislation, and people can slip through the cracks.
And McCarthy's like, nah, let's keep the cracks open.
Said, actually,
not?
That's cool. You know, my cousin who owns, who's like a 500 trillion zillionaire, he actually uses these, so we can't. Because that's really what all these boil down to, is their billionaire donors wouldn't like it if they closed those loopholes. Some good things, student loan forgiveness is off the table.
Big,
but I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of scared that it's off the table because McCarthy cited one of his reasons for it being off the table is the legal challenges in SCOTUS. And
he
that
thinks
makes
he doesn't
me
need
think,
to fight the fight.
That makes me think it's not going to go our way if they're confident about that.
I did see somewhere that student loan repayments are going to resume again as a part of this deal.
Really?
I don't know if that's 100% confirmed, but in my reading this morning, that's what I saw. But I did, of course, see that McCarthy's not trying to cancel the plan with this legislation, which is like, not great. Like, what I would have liked to see is Biden just kind of sneak in that the plan is, you know, in law. Yeah. That would have been great.
That would have been super cool.
Because then the court ruling wouldn't have mattered, right? Because Congress would have done it.
God, that would have been sick. Cuts to IRS funding, which ironically increased the deficit, are coming, and different sources are reporting different things. I think the Wall Street Journal said that they are going to, originally, like, what was it, the Inflation Reduction Act passed an $80 billion increase to the IRS.
Which is gas, by the way.
Which is pretty sick. It's going to be cut back by, I think, $10 billion. Wall Street Journal is reporting $10 billion. Axios is reporting $2 billion, so I don't really know what to trust, but there will be some cut to the IRS, which is like,
It's significant, right? Because, again, we're talking about reducing the deficit. One way to do that is to pay off your debts rather than incur new ones. You gotta if a country wants to do that, you got to raise revenue somehow.
Yeah.
And usually that's through taxation. That's the main way
you either get more money
revenue.
Or you spend less money.
And
like,
we can't do that without the IRS, of course. Mm-hmm. And I saw some number, some figure put out there that every $1 that goes into the IRS is $6 back into the government's pockets.
It's the only agency that makes money.
Yeah, it makes money. And by taking money away from it, we actually can't pay our debts back. Yeah. So.
But the whole point of this hostage situation was to pay the debts. So, you know, conservatives don't really think like that, though.
It almost seems like the whole debt situation, the whole debt narrative was completely a smokescreen and all they want to do is hurt people.
No, literally. And it's like, I got that in later. It seems like the debt ceiling only exists to give conservatives like a talking point. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's only us in Denmark that have an actual like fiscal monetary like limit that isn't a percentage based thing. We have a hard dollar amount limit.
Yeah.
And Denmark's is so high above what the government actually spends that they never have to worry about hitting it. Yeah. And when it needs to be raised, it's raised without question. We're the only country that does it like this. It's completely arbitrary. We could set the debt limit to $1 trillion and never have to worry about it again. But no.
Yeah. And like the 14th Amendment thing, which we've been hearing a lot about, right? This idea that the 14th Amendment completely precludes any of these debates, says that the debts can't be questioned. Specifically for this reason, I was listening to some interview the other day, and somebody had said that the reason that was implemented in the 14th Amendment was because after the Civil War, all the Southern states that were mad wanted to do exactly what's happening right now and stop us from paying back debt so that we couldn't, you know, continue to do things. We couldn't continue to function as a country. And the language that debts can't be questioned was added to the 14th Amendment to prevent this from happening.
Nuts.
And I guess we've just lost the plot in the 120 years since this was the 14th Amendment passed. So.
And it's like, I'd also like to point out that Denmark, only other country that has a similar situation that we do, does all of this while having a debt limit so high they never reach it and while having an expansive welfare state. They're doing all of that.
Everyone's got healthcare.
Everyone's got healthcare. They're doing better. The income inequality isn't crazy like it is over here. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the debt limit only exists just to give conservatives ammo in calling Democrats fiscally irresponsible, despite them racking up deficits higher than Obama inherited after the Great Recession under Trump.
In less time.
Trump racked up the deficit to higher levels than what Obama inherited after the Great Recession pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Pre-COVID. Yeah. Oh my God, I can't, bro.
Now, you might be thinking, okay, Armageddon's not going to happen because we got a deal between Biden and McCarthy.
There's a deal. They said okay.
Like, it's a Republican one of the head Republicans and the Democratic president, they got a deal, meaning it must pass, right?
Yeah.
You might think that, but all is not well.
No.
Passage is certainly not guaranteed. According to CNN, Hakeem Jeffries, who is the leader of the House Democrats, said that there is, quote, nothing in the bill for Democrats, which is very reassuring, meaning that he's probably not going to want his party to vote for it. And the new cutoff day is June 5th, as we mentioned before. So we're kind of losing time. And legislation takes a little while to pass.
Yeah, it takes,
it's not a quick process.
You got to write it, mm-hmm. all of it, and pretty big bills.
And now you might think, okay, Republicans have a 222 majority in the House, so why don't they just pass it without Democrats?
Uh-huh.
There's another problem. From Reuters, quote, Republican Representative Bob Good, a member of the conservative House Freedom Caucus, that's the group that opposed Kevin McCarthy, by the way,
yeah.
tweeted that he was hearing a deal that would raise the debt by $4 trillion and added, quote, if that is true, I don't need to hear anything else. No one is claiming to be a conservative. No one claiming to be a conservative could justify a yes vote, meaning that him and maybe four of his other friends won't vote for it, meaning the bill never passes, right? Like that's all it takes. That's all it takes. We're inches from collapse. We are staring down the barrel of economic global economic crisis, and it looks like they might not be able to get it done.
No, actually,
and we could
no.
be proven wrong by the time this episode comes out. I hope so, but from what we're seeing on the eve of Armageddon, I'm not too sure.
No, not at all. As of Sunday morning, Democrat Representative Jim Hines is saying that he's currently a no vote. He says there's nothing for Dems in the bill, and he doesn't want to validate the negotiation process used by the GOP here. North Carolina's Dan Bishop described the deal earlier Saturday as utter capitulation in progress by the side holding the cards.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's so sick. So both Democrats and Republicans want to vote no.
Yeah.
They're both signaling that they're not going to accept any of this. What is it? The leader of the Progressive Caucus in the House, I forget her name, has also signaled that it's going to be a no.
Is that Pramila Jayapal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Her.
Yeah.
She's also signaling that it's not going to happen.
Right.
So it's like, oh.
Because you're taking welfare away from people, and that's obviously going to be a problem for most Democrats today, to be honest, but certainly progressives, right? You're making it harder for people to get welfare. You're not touching defense spending. It's completely out of the realm of ever even addressing the deficit problem, which has been the point of all of this, I thought.
Yeah.
And then for Republicans that are angry at Kevin McCarthy or going to be angry at Kevin McCarthy, it raises the debt ceiling without getting everything they wanted, which means either debt collapse or Kevin McCarthy loses his job. Those are the options, right?
It's just so nuts how no one is happy with this deal.
Yeah.
Because Biden came out and said, well, it's a compromise. So not everyone's not going to be happy. That's not what compromise is.
Right.
Compromise is coming to common middle ground where you're both satisfied. Mm-hmm. Both sides are supposed to be satisfied. No one is satisfied with this deal. And I'm certainly not satisfied with it. Conservatives that I'm reading about both in the House, Senate, and just regular people are not happy about this at all.
And it's crazy because the first deal we saw, or I guess the first proposed bill from the Republicans was astronomically bad.
Yeah.
Right. We saw unilateral cuts to SNAP, TANF. We saw some cuts to Medicaid. We saw cuts to veterans programs, just really, really bad stuff. Uh-huh. Cuts to basically everything Joe Biden had done. And this bill is still really bad. Or this potential agreement is still really, really bad. And we haven't even talked about the Senate. The Senate might not even take this up. And of course, the Senate's going to require 60 votes to get anything done because you got to break the filibuster. Someone's going to filibuster it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't get it done in the Senate, then it's never getting to Joe Biden's desk and it's not going to pass. So I don't know what happens with this, but it's obviously a progression. We've made progress. We're going in a direction, but I don't know that it's actually going to get people on board that it needs to in order to pass.
Yeah, and it's speaking about the SNAP thing and the debt ceiling proposal that they passed earlier in March, according to Punchbowl News, this is from Yahoo Finance, McCarthy told his caucus behind closed doors on Saturday that the final requirements for work requirements are a little stronger than what they had proposed in their debt ceiling proposal in March.
Really?
So McCarthy is saying behind closed doors that they got more than what they originally wanted,
Christ.
Which is nuts.
Oh my God.
Because who is this really for?
I don't know.
What did Democrats get?
Yeah.
Nothing.
I have no idea. And keep in mind, right? The parameters of this debate have been set by the Republican Party.
Yeah.
When Kevin McCarthy was elected speaker, he basically sold his soul and made a promise that if he gets to stay in the speakership, that he will propose a bill cutting all kinds of spending at the threat of crashing the global economy with the debt ceiling crisis.
He took that. He said, okay, yeah, I want this job.
Yeah. And so if we do get to a point where the economy collapses because Democrats and Republicans just can't find a deal that works for everybody, which it looks like they won't, it's his fault.
He did this. No one person should be able to have that much power at all. At all, especially someone as insecure that wanted that job so bad. He just wanted his fucking a painting of himself in the White House or the chambers or whatever.
Yeah, and like, let's not take away responsibility from the Republican Party. Almost all of them are going along with this, right?
Oh, yeah.
There were 40-some Republican senators that voted or signed on to some memo that said, yeah, we're not going to vote for a debt ceiling raise unless we get some kind of spending cut. Mm-hmm. So all Republicans are obviously complicit in what's going on here, but this can't happen without the leadership of people like Kevin McCarthy, who are pushing this along, who are kowtowing to the most extreme elements of the Republican Party right now. This is the kind of thing that ends empires. And even if it doesn't happen right now, the growing strength of the furthest right reaches of this country is not a good thing.
Yeah.
It is not good. It is not going to be good legislatively, economically, or in any other way.
I'm sick of this guy, Kevin.
And there's like, I've seen a couple of people, I guess we could talk about like just the leftist liberal response. I've seen some people claim that, you know, this is all intentional, that the debt ceiling is set up so that Democrats can have an excuse to cut welfare, which is something they secretly actually want to do. And maybe
it's right, like some of them do.
Like, yeah, well, certainly like people like Joe Manchin, the more centrist, moderate right wingers in the Democratic Party do want to cut welfare. But I think when it comes to Biden, the options are either they just didn't have a strategy. They weren't prepared for this somehow. They didn't see it coming.
They absolutely weren't prepared for this. I do fully believe that Biden thought that somehow there were going to be good faith negotiations.
Yeah.
Because there are so many things that he could have done to avoid getting to the point where we are now. Yeah. He could have tried to do something with the 14th Amendment back. We've known about this for months. We've been literally covering this for months. We've actually been covering this for years now, considering that we had this exact same debate this time last year and in October. He should have known that it was going to come up again now, because why wouldn't it?
Well, and I've seen some people say that during, like, I think Senator Tim Kaine had said that during the lame duck session, they should have passed some law either raising the debt ceiling or getting rid of this function entirely or pushing it out a couple of years. And maybe, but I don't think they would have had the votes to do that, certainly in the Senate.
Probably
I don't think it would have passed, even with budget reconciliation. I don't think Joe Manchin
would sit there and he'd do the same thing he did with budget reconciliation, where he said, no, these things need to be actually debated in actual process. We can't just rush them through.
What they should have done, I think, is start the whole court process with the 14th Amendment interpretation like a year ago, at least, right? Yeah. Like, well, because I guarantee that they knew about the whole 14th Amendment thing before people started reporting about it. So that's what they should have done to begin with.
They better have.
But the reason I don't think that Joe Biden secretly wants to do this, or I guess the Biden administration, is because the bills that he's passed, whether it's the Inflation Reduction Act or the CARES funding when he first came in as president, I think that was under Joe Biden. The American Rescue Plan was the COVID funding.
CARES Act was Trump.
That was under Trump administration. All of like the big packages he's passed have been extremely popular. We started his administration with a huge expansion to welfare programs with the child tax credit. He tried to do student debt relief and all these other things. I don't think his administration really wants to. I think they're just either fumbling it or they got something up their sleeve that I'm unaware of. Right?
You think so? Maybe they got a trap card that they're about to lay.
They've surprised me a couple of times with the whole with the student debt relief specifically. Obviously, it hasn't happened yet. It hasn't been a big success like we want it to be. With the way in which they played Joe Manchin and the Republican Party, to be honest, they passed the infrastructure deal and then did everything else they wanted to. I thought that was pretty good, but who knows, right? Maybe they've got something, but the clock's ticking and my faith in them has never been very high.
Yeah, so. But I love the debt ceiling talk. Hopefully this episode comes out before things collapse. You know how that goes.
I'd rather us be timely than the country be saved. You know what I'm saying?
Basically,
I need the content. Like, basically. I'm thinking about me.
If the vote could happen on Wednesday night after you all listen to this episode, that'd be pretty sick, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd fuck with that.
I think it's time to move on to Ron.
I think it is.
Ron DeSantis. This is like old news at this
point. Mr. Meatball.
Like, who cares about Ron?
Yeah, it kind of blew up. Everybody knows the gist of it, but you know we got to cover it.
Those of you that were here on live or have watched our VOD replay of the live, know that we've covered
this. You got to watch the announcement with us.
Yeah, because we covered it. But the moment that we've all been waiting for has finally come. And you know what I'm talking about. It's the official announcement of Ron DeSantis. He's now officially running in the 2024 election. His candidacy actually leaked a couple of hours before his announcement because of his FEC filing. Which is something you got to do. It's a legal thing. His official announcement took place over Twitter, of course, on Twitter Spaces. Audio only. It was a Zoom call alongside Elon Musk and some dude named David Sachs, who I guess is just like a PayPal guy.
Like one of the
ninth investor to PayPal or something like that. That's how he knows Elon Musk. Nice. That's how he got in on this. The first 20 minutes, of course, of this Twitter space were filled with silence and audio feedback and crashes. At one point, they just had to end it and create a new one because they couldn't get it to work. They attempted to frame this as breaking the internet, quote unquote, which of course it wasn't. No. It was just breaking a function of Twitter because they didn't know how to make it work. And I guess
the servers just weren't working. Elon Musk got caught on hot mic saying that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Golly, bro. That's like if our stream fucked up on Friday and we said, guys, we broke the internet. Our 50 viewers, we broke the internet, baby. Come on.
Yeah. It's like they were, when it first went down, they were sub 500,000 people.
Yeah.
And then eventually they recuperated up to, I don't know, like 400 something thousand people were in the Twitter spaces, I think. I don't know. I mean, it was a couple hundred thousand people, but of course, you can get radio shows that with more people listening in.
Yeah, you Fox can get AOC more on Twitch in. With more people.
Yeah, like, no, it's not like an unheard of thing to have that many people listen, especially when it's a presidential announcement for the person behind the front runner right now, you would think, Ron DeSantis.
He could have just got a slot on Fox News. Yeah. He could have had fucking Brian Kilmeade gas him up, but no, he went on with Elon. And then in the video they dropped, that was just, I think, his Twitter space audio over some like footage of both of them walking around, repeating like four fucking times. Yeah. It was more Elon than it was Ron.
Right.
That blew my mind.
And that was released by DeSantis's team.
Yeah, DeSantis like, War Room, baby. DeSantis Come War on. Room,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, the whole launch is fucked.
It was bad.
Like, it was honestly more focused on Elon than it was on Rob.
Like, even if they didn't have any problems related to Twitter spaces, it was still really bad.
Yeah.
Like, once you actually got into the event, like, once it actually started and Twitter spaces was functioning as they wanted it to, it still wasn't exciting. It still wasn't good.
And
they even got flamed by, what's his name? Jesse Waters on Fox News.
Yeah.
Like, that guy sucks. If he's flaming you, it's over. Like,
you're done for.
Yeah.
Get off.
Yeah, you're done.
Get off. Withdraw your FEC filing. You don't want to run, dog. Yeah. I swear to God. Because, like, okay, you can say whatever you want about just, like, the Twitter space fucking up. Why he did it on Twitter spaces, whatever. The speech itself was just bad.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Like, I flat out, it was just bad. It was not exciting. There was no vigor. He was just reading a script.
I was going to say,
and
yeah.
You could tell he was just reading a script. Like, oh my God, I do it better than he does. Mm-hmm. I do it better than he does every week on the show with the show notes.
Yeah.
Like, you're running for president.
Yeah.
No vigor whatsoever while he's saying Biden has no vigor, which, like, true, but neither do you.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
The campaign video, like, they basically did what we did and just clipped as soon as it was over to put it up on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, etc. What it was just 4 minutes of DeSantis reading from a screen, right? Yep. Like, that's all it was. So boring.
Oh God, bro, I can't wait for Trump to start clapping his ass, bro.
I know. And we didn't really even get any policy prescriptions outside of what we already knew, which is, like, you know, he hates trans people, he hates gay people, wants to give money to the elite as much as he possibly can.
The woke virus came to Florida and we killed it.
Yeah.
Not COVID, though.
Specifically not that virus.
One virus came and we got it, but we didn't worry about the other one.
I guess the case for this kind of announcement was that Ron DeSantis, this is kind of the argument advanced by DeSantis and Elon Musk and David Balsacks. It was that so Ron could speak directly to the people, reach a quote unquote larger audience than he would if he did a typical campaign announcement like we've seen in the past. Which, of course, he accomplished neither of these things.
And it's horseshit. Like, how is speaking to people on Twitter speaking more directly than just Fox News? You're not interacting with anyone.
Right.
Like, it's the same.
Like, well, because in reality, right, he spoke to two billionaires that are already on his side. I think David Sacks is a billionaire, at least. Silicon Valley tech bro type guys that are already on his side. And then a curated list of people that he already knows agree with him, probably with a set of fielded questions that he already agreed to.
But, like,
none of it was real.
Also suck, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, the big thing here is, like, Elon Musk is, yes, he's very popular, unfortunately, but he's not popular for his charisma.
Yeah.
He's popular for being, I don't know, a fucking nerd.
Yeah. And commenting under Nazis posts, like, interesting, we'll look into it.
And shitty memes. Yeah. And just, oh my God, just being an awful poster. Mm-hmm. Trying so hard to be a poster, which you're already fucked if you're trying.
Uh-huh.
You know, you just got to shit on the timeline.
Some people got it, some people don't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely. There's a gene for it, and Elon does not have it, I swear to God. But he's not charismatic.
Uh-uh.
To launch it, he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's how he sounds, too. Yeah, he's like
we stopped the mind virus in Florida. We didn't lock down Florida. Oh yeah.
Like he kept interrupting Ron DeSantis to like talk about cryptocurrency or to just say some weird line.
He's like, oh yeah, and crypto too. Don't forget about crypto. Mm-hmm. Yes, crypto. We can't forget about crypto. You know,
I'm fine with crypto. I wouldn't do anything about crypto.
I love crypto.
So obviously, so like those are the, there's a lot of problems with the announcement. But we kind of already alluded to the idea that could have just been in front of an audience or on primetime Fox or really any cable news show would have had him on for an announcement. Absolutely.
Like you're telling,
and
he would have
got more people.
You're telling me that he couldn't have got, I don't know, 1,000 fucking psychos in Florida to show up for him, like on a stage somewhere.
Yeah.
Like you're telling me he couldn't, that instantly would have been better. Instantly, I mean, so many of like the things that made this event bad would have been better if he was just like, I don't know, at a podium and like shaking his fist or something.
And he could have done that in conjunction with having Fox Primetime cover it.
Yeah.
And then he,
and
maybe,
he would have had every news outlet cover it.
And he could have like gotten to the pocket of Fox a little bit. Maybe they would have pushed back against Donald Trump, because we already know that there's some insider information that a lot of Fox News hosts don't like Trump that much. Yeah. So if he got into their pocket a little bit, he could have had Fox News on his side, which is a pretty powerful force nowadays.
Yeah, because...
But he didn't do that.
It's just like, if he'd have done any announcement, like regular fucking announcement, he'd have had every cable news channel streaming it.
Yeah.
Just like they do with all of Trump's shit. Like, that's how it goes. Like, it's a big deal. It's a presidential announcement. But no, he cucked himself.
Yeah, he opted for what was essentially a Zoom call or a radio interview, which completely defeats the point, because a part of the announcement is they see you. Right, the visuals.
He should have done it with. He should have done it on here. Should have done a head in the office. Yeah. We could have clipped it, put it on TikTok. It would have got more views too.
Yeah, no, it was really bad. My conspiracy, of course, okay. I have two of them actually now, because I've been thinking about it a little bit.
Word.
One, of course, is that he couldn't get a crowd, so he's worried about not being able to get a crowd. Which I don't know is even true, because like he could have got like a couple, maybe a couple thousand to come out 100% in Florida, right?
In Florida, yeah, absolutely.
Could have at least paid people to come sit in the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. His first stop is in like what, Iowa?
Yeah,
for like a rally or a speech or some shit. Yeah, he's doing like a world tour. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, he went to Japan as governor of Florida for some reason.
That's sick.
He was already in New Hampshire because he had that weird diner experience. He was just like, "Good deal, good deal."
What's your name?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's gonna stop in Iowa pretty soon, so that'll be interesting.
My other conspiracy, and I think this is kind of basically confirmed at this point, is he doesn't really want to be questioned by journalists. Anytime he gets into like a press conference or something where he's about to be questioned, he does almost worse than Trump, because you know Trump will kind of become like overbearing, overwhelming, almost make fun of, ridicule the person that's asking them questions.
Yeah. Oh,
DeSantis kind of kicks that up, and it doesn't come across like Trump's does. It comes across more as like he doesn't have an answer.
Yeah, because like at least Trump, like he'll never give a straight answer. He does do the politician thing.
Yeah.
He just does it in like, I don't want to say he's witty, because he's not witty, but he just does it like Trump is quick with it. Like he's snappy. DeSantis isn't. No charisma. Charisma suck.
And I can't really explain it, but somehow Trump is able to convince a lot of people that the media's got it out for him, right? Well, maybe it's just because he's been saying it so much, like, oh, the media's got it out for me, they're trying to take me down. DeSantis says the same thing, but I think less people believe him.
Oh, for sure.
Maybe it's because he's, you know, he went to Harvard, he's an Ivy League guy. He's seen more as like an establishment type than Trump ever was, so.
And
he's running against Trump, of course. So it's kind of obvious that he's trying to steal a lot from him.
It's like, even when he does have a video appearance, like his interview with Ben Shapiro that we, again, you know, covered on the live. You could have came and watched it with us anyway. I digress. He films it like a Democrat films like a YouTube campaign ad.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just standing in front of a wall with a shitty mic and a shitty camera.
Uh-huh.
Dude, like, we got better equipment than
Trump would have been there in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just dudes, and we have better equipment than you, and we do this better than you.
And our camera keeps going out of focus.
Exactly. You're running for president. Yeah. Come on.
Well, and it's like, because of his announcement, all that people could talk about was how bad it was.
Yeah.
Like, he could have gotten, of course, in the long run, it's probably not going to matter. You don't remember most announcements.
It's like he started with no momentum.
He starts with no momentum, and he doesn't get the news cycle that he wants with his policy ideas and his quips out in front, because nobody knew what he was talking about, because it was over a Zoom call. That's all people could pay attention to.
And even like Fox News Daytime was covering it, and they were covering Trump's response to DeSantis and shitting on DeSantis.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, we actually got a Trump reply. I don't know if it was after or during the announcement, but Trump posted on Truth Social many times.
Oh, so
but
sick.
The one I wanted to highlight is where he says, quote, "Rob, my red button is bigger, better, stronger, and is working. Truth," in parentheses, all caps. "Yours does not. Per my conversation with Kim Jong-un of North Korea, soon to become my friend." And that's what he said in a post. I don't really know what this means.
But it's so good.
He's calling him Rob.
And it's also, "My red button works. Dog, you're not the president."
It's like a fanfic.
You lost. Like, you don't need to have the Diet Coke button anymore.
Yeah. You think DeSantis can make a comeback at this point?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's going to be real hard.
Can
I think
he
he's
beat the
be
meatball
clawing.
Allegations?
He can't beat the meatball allegations. Can he beat the 5-7 allegations? No.
Nope, you've lost those
no,
already.
No, you're done for. Like, yeah. Come on. You pull up to a diner in the Midwest, you're done. You're a little girl.
Yeah. My favorite theory right now is, and this is just, I haven't seen a ton of reporting on this, but there's been some people saying like how involved his wife is in the campaign in terms of like managing and helping out. And even he has said that his wife is very involved.
My wife.
We had the clip where he's like, my wife. So his wife is very involved. And my favorite theory right now that I think conservatives might latch onto if they get the chance. Okay. Is that of course a woman is corrupting him and that's why he's going to lose.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's
because you can't trust women, of course.
Honestly, if that is what happens, that's got to be number two, like theories why a campaign fell right behind Andrew Yang's. My staffers wouldn't let Andrew be Andrew.
Oh, exactly.
Those are both very sick. Really very gas. Cool. They're one and two far ahead number three.
Well, of course, it's so easy for conservatives to just like find some woman involved in whatever problem and say like, oh yeah, well she corrupted the man and you know took away everything he loved and made him a really sad husk of a person. Like, it's always the woman's fault.
Maybe that would be dope if, again, you know, on the live stream, we were talking about, like, Trump's possible running mates. Maybe it's Kari Lake. And then maybe if Kari Lake is his running mate, right, then we could have a situation where instead of claiming election denial if he loses in 2024, they can just blame it on her.
Oh, exactly.
And that's actually cool because she sucks.
Yeah, but that doesn't have as like as legal as much of legal implications as the election fraud one does.
That's true.
Because then they can still claim victory.
Yeah.
But if it's like a personality that lost you the election, then it's like whatever. But you know, maybe Kari Lake's been auditioning ever since she lost in Arizona.
That's what I'm saying. It's that loss in Arizona and the election denial that she's been doing on the timeline ever since had to have just been an audition getting ready for a bid at VP.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be it. She's been going so hard at it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Didn't she have a Nazi on? Or like there was like a Nazi car or something that we covered in one of her like videos?
Oh, I think that was Mehmet Oz. He gave a speech in front of a replica Adolf Hitler car with the Nazi insignias all over it. And then Kari Lake has been taking pictures ever since she ran back in 2022. She's been taking like fan pictures with like known white supremacists and Proud Boys and stuff like that.
Nice.
Which is like kind of par for the course at this point, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of just their fan base. It's kind of who they curate around
them,
right?
Damn, bro.
I think it's time to move on to our next piece of news, though.
I think it is.
We got to talk about some abortion news. Once again, your rights, if you're a person with the capacity to get pregnant, back on the chopping block.
Uh-huh. Hanging by a thread.
Yeah, no, you're never free, of course. You may have thought last few episodes you got away from the news cycle. Nope, you're coming back. You may have thought back when, what was it, the Plan C pill or whatever, the abortion pill was being considered to be like taken away from everyone in the country.
And then like your rights were reaffirmed. Mm-hmm. You're probably like, oh, yes, what a win. I can take a breath. No.
Not if you're in these two states.
Not never.
Because we got bills from both Carolinas. We got one from North Carolina, one from South Carolina, both limiting abortion. So starting in North Carolina, this is actually a story that a viewer asked us to cover. But last week, Wednesday, the North Carolina legislature voted to override a veto of a 12-week abortion ban, meaning that the law has gone into effect or will go into effect pretty soon, which cuts abortion options for North Carolinians by 8 weeks.
Wait, so it's a 4-week ban?
12-week ban. Originally, it's at 20. And now it's going down to 12.
Oh, so they lose 8 okay. Weeks I thought time. You were saying they were trying to make it 20, and then it was cut by 8 weeks to go to a 4-week ban.
That'd be crazy. We'll just wait till we get to South Carolina.
Oh.
And then it gets pretty bad.
Okay.
An important note here is that the legislature in North Carolina is Republican-controlled, of course. It's a red state.
Who'd have thought?
And they already had a veto-proof majority in their Senate from the previous election. However, they just obtained a veto-proof majority in their House because one Democrat... One, that's all they needed, decided to switch to becoming a Republican in April.
Oh.
And that set the ground for them to override this veto.
Her name, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Got a little infighting here. That's nuts.
Her name is Trisha Cotham. I think I'm saying that right. Doesn't matter because fuck her anyway.
Yeah.
She represents Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. She switched parties after she won as a Democrat in 2022 elections. And her switching, of course, gave the GOP the ability to override vetoes in both of their chambers.
Crazy. Yeah. That's not like if they can do it, why can't we?
And what's even worse is she campaigned on supporting abortion rights.
Really?
And had she voted to override this, the law wouldn't be in place now. So she is the reason, and I guess you can blame the entire Republican Party in the state. Of course, they're insane. But she really is the reason that that this law is in effect. And now people in North Carolina only get 12 weeks to have an abortion instead of the usual 20.
I feel like such an egregious switch up like that should be subject to like you being impeached.
Yeah, right. Like, well, 'cause she lied.
In a democratic like republic, like the principles that this country is built on, if I'm going to take the conservative framing,
yeah,
are built on representation based on what the people want, because you mm-hmm. can't have direct democracy, because then it'd be too much, it'd be too hard.
Too many people.
So we elect representatives to represent the will of the people that elected them. Mm-hmm. And if you're just going to lie, like lie way more than the average politician, because they all lie.
Of course.
They all lie, but usually they lie and there's something that goes on where they have plausible deniability about being able to get it done. They mm-hmm. usually they oversell themselves.
Yeah.
They don't just straight up like lie about what they're going to do, right? Like Biden oversold himself with the $15 minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And there were other things that went on with that. This is just malicious lying.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like she did that with I don't understand. I feel like that should be grounds for impeachment.
Easily accessible recalls. We need uh-huh. those for everybody.
Like that is like misuse of public trust. Mm-hmm. Like egregious misuse.
Yeah, yeah. And she switched parties allegedly because she was being bullied by the Democratic Party.
Oh, it's going to get so much worse.
And she didn't want to quote unquote be controlled by the Democratic Party. And it's like, well, you literally lied to the people that elected you.
I don't want my constituents to be able to tell me how to vote. Uh-huh. Because guys, I'm my own person at the end of the day. So, you know, I got to do me.
Yeah. So that's the reason that abortion rights are being restricted in the state of North Carolina.
Wow, that's crazy. She's about to get bullied so much harder.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rightfully so.
In South Carolina, there's an abortion bill that was just signed into law a couple of days ago that bans all abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. It's called the, quote, Fetal Heartbeat and Protection from Abortion Act, which is corny, of course.
Yeah.
And upon passage, it was set to go into law effective immediately, but it's currently being held up in court. So right now, I think South Carolina is also at 20 weeks for abortions.
Wow. And needless to say, heartbeat bills in of themselves, virtue signal.
Yeah.
What is it like about a heartbeat that is any different than like any other function?
Well, you know, course,
what
I'm right? saying?
It's just like heartbeat. A heart is like a cultural signifier for something that we should like think of and like care for. That's it. It's
yeah.
That's all it is. It's a virtue signal. A heartbeat, not significant. The heartbeat at 6 weeks is really just pacemaker activity.
Well,
what it's actually called. Oh,
here's the thing is I think they listened to Head in the Office from just about a year ago today, probably.
Yeah.
Where you made the same argument, of course, that it's just electrical activity.
Yeah.
And this is from CNN. They said, quote, it bans most abortions after early cardiac activity.
Oh.
Not heartbeat.
Okay.
Can be detected in a fetus or embryo, commonly as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy before many women know they're pregnant. And it also says any physician who violates the law will have their license to practice in the state revoked by the State Board of Medical Examiners and could face felony charges, fines, and jail time.
That's insane.
Which isn't dissimilar to other bills, right?
Yeah, no, it's not. It's still just as insane as the other things, but wow, because electrical activity, like mm-hmm. it's a heartbeat bill,
yep.
but it's not about the heartbeat.
Of
it's
course.
About the pacemaker activity in the heart, which is just a signal. It's just an electrical signal.
The heart's
signal
not even fully there,
forth.
Right?
It can't fucking work.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
It doesn't
it's
work.
Not there. It's not a fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah. So that's pretty awful. Of course, there's many pieces of legislation that fit this similar mold where it's at 6 weeks, or I think 6 weeks is like the popular time.
It is, because that's
right
where
now.
You can do that virtue signal.
Which, of course, doesn't make any fucking sense if it's murder, by the way.
They're
but
not
going to
do the fucking blastocyte bill.
Yeah.
They're not going to be like, oh, yeah, actually, once the zygote forms into a blastocyte, then that's it. They're not going to do the, oh, there's three germ layers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a person now. It's all the fucking same thing. It,
yeah.
it really is all the same thing.
But one important note is that you maybe see a pattern in a lot of bills, whether it's abortion bills or bills to restrict gender affirming care or bathroom bills or, you know, whatever they are targeting marginalized. Uh-huh. groups. There's a lot of similarities between states. And it's we haven't talked about this much, but there is a whole industry behind like conservative interest groups where they write pieces of legislation, submit them to legislatures, and those just get passed without a representative ever really touching it or doing much to amend it. And I think that's kind of what's happening here.
Oh, that's got to be.
There's millions,
on.
Millions, perhaps billions of dollars behind this industry that produces legislation. And these are groups with specific names that you can look up and find uh-huh. where they pump out all the same stuff. And that's why a lot of these bills look so similar.
Isn't it
the same people.
Is that kind of what like Moms for Liberty does with like their book bans?
They
and
might
shit?
Be one of those groups. Yeah,
they might be. I haven't looked too much into it. I plan to in the future for the listener that DM'd us about it. I do want to look into Moms for Liberty. I saw a headline about them earlier. But like, yeah, no, there's that. And like, we've kind of touched on it sometimes, like with anti-trans legislation. Like, people get paid to fly from other states to argue on behalf of the constituents of the state that they don't live in for why trans rights should be taken away. Like, that's insane. That's fucking ridiculous.
There's this policy interest group called ALEC, I think. I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but they have their hands over all kinds of different pieces of legislation, both federally and state by state, where it's just anti-trans laws, whether it's like sports, gender affirming care, et cetera, or book bans or abortion bans or whatever it is. They're just, this is what they do. They just pump out legislation that is awful.
Wow, that's cool. When are we going to get one of those? Why are there only billion-dollar industries around bad things?
Yeah.
When are we going to get the good things?
Well, see, there is interest groups that will produce mock legislation.
Yeah, they're just not as powerful.
For liberals, of course, but I guess the only state willing to take them or do anything about leftist causes is Minnesota now.
For real.
No one else is brave enough, I suppose.
Minnesota and Michigan, kind of. Michigan hasn't gone as crazy as Minnesota, unfortunately, but we're doing some things.
Yeah. Bill, also back to the South Carolina law, CNN also says, quote, the law includes exceptions to save a patient's life for fatal fetal anomalies, as well as limited exceptions up to 12 weeks for victims of rape and incest, with doctor reporting requirements to local law enforcement, which is awful, as we've talked about before. It also contains an amendment added by the House, and this is, I thought this was interesting, an amendment added by the House that would require, quote, a biological father to pay child support from the point of conception.
Huh?
How do we feel about that?
It's kind of cool, I guess.
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it?
That is really weird, because like,
That's a first. I've never seen that before.
That's I don't get it. I bet conservatives are gonna love that with all the nonsense they say about how family court is so against men and how child support is unethical. But I don't know if I have a take on that. That's just weird.
Yeah, it is a weird addition. Let us know what you think in the comments.
I guess I kind of get it, because like, once you're pregnant, you need more things.
Yeah,
like you are just gonna need more things to be able to get by. So I mean. Makes sense.
But they don't pair this with any kind of state-run program that delivers needed benefits and resources to pregnant people, of course.
Yeah.
They just don't do that.
What that's...
So, yeah. Huh. While this law is held up in court, of course, abortion is going to remain legal in South Carolina, which is good. But these two laws from the Carolinas, these two abortion laws that are going to go into effect or might go into effect, are pretty significant, because excluding Virginia, basically the entire South has restricted abortion to 6 weeks, just about.
Yeah.
Except for Virginia, of course. And North Carolina and South Carolina were previously states that you could try to go to, neighboring states that you could go to get abortions. But that's just not going to be an option for a lot of people anymore.
You're going to have to travel across the country.
Yeah.
To be able to do something like
this. It's going to be basically the entire Southeast and like South middle of the country that has abortion bans, because, you know, it's Texas. Obviously, we expected places like Alabama and Mississippi to have abortion bans. Uh-huh. Super conservative.
Like the states you think of when you think of the South.
Yeah, but now it's North Carolina, South Carolina are trying to or have advanced abortion bans. And then there's Florida, of course, that has theirs, Texas that has theirs. And it's materially really, really bad for a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's lots of people in the South. You know what I mean? Lots of people that won't have access to what they need. Of course, these abortion restrictions are super, super unpopular, but who knows what's going to happen here.
Yeah, it's bonkers. I just can't believe that we've gotten this far with it.
Yeah.
Especially considering how deeply unpopular it is and how that represented in a historic midterm turnout for the Democrats. They still continue to pump through these bills almost for the love of the game, or more accurately, for the hatred of women.
For the hatred of women, for the desire to control women, of course. But yeah, as you said, there is no state where abortion won in 2022. Historic turnout for Democrats, especially among young people, whether it's Gen Z or millennials. I don't know what they think they're doing. It's not good.
Hopefully this manifests in some change when it comes to the 2024 election.
Yeah.
Pending Morvey Harper still.
Yeah.
That's,
we'll see if democracy stays intact.
That's going to be
that
a real
be
good
soon,
one.
Right?
It's a couple weeks.
Oh, my
because
God.
Because what? The abortion, Dobbs v. Jackson came out, it leaked in like March, no, March or May.
It leaked in May, I think, and then came out in June, like, was that it?
No, it leaked during the semester, I think. Oh, okay. So I think it
leaked in
March or April.
March, okay.
And then came out beginning of June?
Something like that.
Shit, that's right. When does this term end?
It's always towards the middle of the summer when we get SCOTUS decisions. So yeah, that will be really soon. I mean, we're going to get all kinds of stuff. Society ending, society shattering decisions out of the Supreme Court. Just absolutely god awful from the conservative wing.
So
not going to be great.
That's pretty sick. That's pretty sick. I can't wait to see those. We have, again, LGBT rights on the docket. Morvey Harper, democracy itself. what's the other one? Affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are like the four big ones because there's two gay ones.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure they'll find a way to overturn gay marriage, right? Like they'll find a way to re-implement sodomy laws.
And the Ken Paxton, if he still has a job, he'll enforce them like he said he would.
I think we should end off this episode with two good news stories.
I think so, too.
One, our enemy taking an L.
Yep.
Potentially
always
taking an L.
Super sick.
And then another is a state taking a W in a good way. First, let's talk about Minnesota.
Let's talk about communism.
Typically,
let's talk about radical Stalinist Leninism, Marxism in the truest sense of the word.
Coming back from the grave.
There's a specter haunting everywhere that isn't Minnesota.
The Middle East. Or no, the Midwest. Fuck, I said it the wrong way. Middle East. I was thinking like the east side of the. You get the idea.
Yeah, I got you.
Minnesota, typically considered a purple state, of course, especially when it comes to the state legislature.
Yeah.
It's usually like it doesn't have a trifecta, but as of the 2022 election, Democrats do have a very slim trifecta in their state government. And I didn't know this, but actually, I think their Democratic Party is called like the Democratic Farmers Labor Party. In Minnesota, which is like already kind of cool.
I guess they're making good on that promise.
I don't know when this change happened or if it's always been named that, but I like that.
I wish we had something like that here. And I wish that our trifecta here in Michigan would do something like they're doing in Minnesota right now.
And it's crazy
because go nuts.
Michigan's doing some pretty good things.
Yeah, they are.
We've gotten some good pieces of legislation out, but nowhere near what Minnesota has done.
No.
And I didn't even know the full extent until I was looking into it because the legislative session just ended for Minnesota, of course. And with a very slim trifecta, you usually wouldn't expect much. They only had one or two seats.
I think it was one or two seats, but they all came together. Like the progressives and the more liberal people in the party came together and they said, you know what? We need to get things done while we can get things done. And they had the right attitude about it. And this is what they were able to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. Minnesota, as I said, their session just ended and they were able to revive communism in the state.
That's right.
They're on a comeback.
That's right.
And this is honestly, Minnesota right now is the blueprint. Functionally for what a good blue state should be doing, what a Democratic controlled blue state should be doing, because you don't see places like New York and California doing all this.
No, but a couple
of things they passed.
So many people are just cucked by the idea of procedure and the idea of like, oh no, we need to consider like these conservatives represent people too.
Yeah, right.
We need to let them have a say in it. No, you don't.
They steamrolled them.
You need to do good things.
Yeah,
you can run over the conservatives because the conservatives will run over you.
There was a couple of times, and of course we'll get to this, when the Democrats in their House, Senate, and in their House and Senate. Just completely ignored what the governor wanted.
Yeah.
Because the governor wanted to be a bit more conservative, also a Democrat, by the way. And they just kind of ignored him and passed it anyway.
Which is pretty sick. And he only, we'll talk about it at the end. Yeah. He vetoed one of the pieces of legislation because they didn't have veto proof majorities. But anyway.
So here's a couple of things. We're going to try to get to like the big ones. Inevitably, we're going to miss some things because you know how that goes. But here's a couple of things, a couple of very important things that Minnesota did pass. First, they codified Roe v. Wade. And in the same bill, they also legislated protections for contraception, sterilization, preconception care, maternity care, family planning, and fertility services. All of that is now in law in Minnesota.
Excellent.
They have now universal free school breakfast and lunch for all students K-12, regardless of income. Everybody just gets it.
Pretty sick. They said for the schools to get it, they have to enroll in like the federal free lunch program. Yep. And for any student that isn't covered with the federal guidelines, Minnesota is just going to pay out of pocket for them.
Yep.
Sick.
Yeah, yeah. As I think Michael Parenti said, I'm for the movement that feeds the children.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely a guess. They also now have universal paid family and sick leave for all workers, raising the coverage from 25% to 100% in the Minnesota
workforce.
Huge
dub. Huge dub for communism.
Yeah,
huge dub for Karl Marx.
They also legalized marijuana, just outright. Pretty cool.
Nice.
They funded the removal and replacement of all lead pipes in the state over the next several years.
Common sense.
Yep.
Common sense reform. I think we could use some of that over in Michigan.
They banned non-competes for all workers and added tons of other protections for labor unions, which we love to see that. They created legislation to prevent cooperation with states that attempt to persecute trans people, and they set up protections for gender-affirming care so that it can't get taken away from trans people in Minnesota. And they also banned conversion therapy.
All gas.
They established a free public college program for those making under $80,000 a year, and they just poured money into K-12
substantial benefit. Huge. Again, college, the number one way to increase like class mobility.
Yep.
And just access to so many more people in Minnesota are going to have it.
Yeah. They also added, in terms of elections, they added automatic voter registration in their state. They added pre-registration for those below 18, which, if you don't know, just means that you are you have all your documents in. Mm-hmm. And then once you turn 18, you're able to vote. And they made mail ballots a lot more accessible. And on top of that, voting rights are restored to all felons upon finishing their sentence.
So sick.
And they also, if we're talking criminal justice, made prison phone calls free. Which is just
astronomical
great.
Dub. Yeah. Astronomical dub.
Like, if you don't even know about, like, obviously, when you are taken, a lot of people that are taken to jail or prison, just, they don't have the money
you
for a phone call,
be
right?
You should be making money off of people who are incarcerated speaking to their families.
Yeah, and those phone calls matter, of course. Yeah. They also enhanced gun laws, and they included background checks, red flag laws, and a lot more. They allow everyone now, including undocumented immigrants, to obtain driver's licenses. They added a child tax credit to cut poverty, or childhood poverty, by about 25%. And they did so much more across basically every issue you can think of, whether it's housing, transportation, healthcare, the environment, criminal justice, and it's so on and so on.
It's really pretty cool. Sick. They revived Marx. He's back, baby.
Yeah.
Back in the flesh. They're him. Capitol Volume 3.
Yeah.
Minnesota legislature just wrote it. Another notable law that they also passed is they passed a bill that would make it so that Uber and other rideshare services like Lyft would have to pay its drivers separate fixed rates per mile with and without passengers, as well as flat $5 fees to drivers. Uber pushed back, threatened to pull out of the state, and the governor vetoed the bill.
Yeah.
So just absolutely caved and capitulated to corporate pressure on that one. That sucks.
Yeah, that's the typical conservative argument, is that if you, say, raise minimum wage or you increase taxes, or you specifically here target a certain industry and say, we're going to make it better for workers, the argument typically says that corporations, these companies, will pull out because it'll become too expensive. They'll just leave. And Democrats here in Minnesota wanted to challenge that notion. And to me, I feel like that argument was almost proven false based on the reaction from Uber and Lyft. Mm-hmm. You don't lobby so hard to get a veto if you want to leave the state anyway. Why not just pull out at that point if you want to do that? To me, it says that they couldn't have afforded to pull out, or they would have just lost tons and tons of money from pulling out. Because, you know, Minnesota's got major
pulling
cities.
Pulling out of a huge state.
Right.
Like, you can't do that without taking a big hit, especially when you're a company like Uber who's not profiting. Mm-hmm. It's not a profitable business model at all. They need to expand. They can't afford to contract.
Exactly.
Shit like that. So that's really annoying. He did announce that he wants to create a commission to raise, like, the wages for these workers next year and try to work with Uber to come with this. But I think obviously you just sideline Uber and you just get Uber, you just get right to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and as they kind of have, create more robust public transportation options. So Uber and Lyft are obsolete.
Yes.
I'm in favor of that. And I think they've taken actions to create like more sustainable busing systems and rail systems and things that people can use. I don't know how substantial it'll be.
Yeah.
Obviously these projects take years, sometimes decades to fully manifest, but, overall, pretty good.
Yeah, I have faith in this Minnesota legislature specifically. Yeah. Looking forward to next term.
Yeah.
Should like, be some gas.
It was crazy because you could see videos of like children hugging the governor because they were happy to get lunches and free breakfast. There's this video of one of the representatives that introduced the Uber Lyft bill being carried out by these workers, like cheering for him. Like, this kind of public support, you just don't see this nowadays.
You when was the last time you saw kids gathering around a kids gathering around a conservative, like, in support of, like, because the conservative did a good thing for them?
Well, I don't even think he's that, like, he's a Democrat, right?
Yeah.
The governor is, but he's, like, more conservative.
No, I mean, like, when has that happened for a conservative?
Oh, I see.
When has that happened for Joe Manchin?
Never.
For Joe Manchin, fucking Matt Gaetz, or, like, any of these other fucking idiots.
You never see constituents just happy around their elected officials.
When have you seen like laborers, like 1099 workers, like blue collar guys getting up and like, I don't know, cheering on conservative legislation and carrying them out of the House chambers?
Yeah.
You don't get it.
With hope in their eyes for a better tomorrow.
Something that's just objectively good. A sight to feast your eyes upon.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, so tons of good things out of Minnesota. Every state should take notes here. Every state that's got Democrats in charge or with more power now, absolutely needs to take notes, whether it's Michigan. Mm-hmm. Did Pennsylvania ever get a trifecta? They might have been like a couple short.
Has a trifecta. I'm not sure, but I know we do.
Yeah.
And I know we could step it up despite the good that we have done.
Yeah.
We haven't had, like, maybe once our legislative section ends, there'll be like a big compilation of things we've accomplished to like go through and we can talk about that. But like off dome, I know we've like protected trans rights a little bit.
Yep. Abortion's codified.
Abortion's codified and we've passed some gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all pretty cool.
Yep.
But I'd like to see pretty much everything Minnesota did. Yeah. I would like to see here. So yeah. that's pretty sick. Shout out to the Minnesota listeners.
I need a massive interstate rail system.
Yeah.
That can take me anywhere I need to go. It should deliver me right to the studio and right
and
to my
Michigan
house.
Michigan should do that.
Uh-huh.
Michigan should do that.
Where's my money
we
going?
We can be the pioneers. Come on. We don't need to fix the roads if we start rails.
We're not the car manufacturing hub of the world anymore. It's time to make some progress.
Train manufacturing hub of the world. Come on now. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Michigan, right? We have climate bipolar. You know, it's always raining and freezing and snowing. It fucks our roads. So many potholes. Awful roads in Michigan. If you know, basically.
Yeah.
Why keep doing it?
Yeah, we shouldn't.
We shouldn't. We should build rail.
I know of a very efficient way of moving a lot of people. More people than a single car can.
When you don't need road.
Yeah, exactly.
No road, actually.
It's trains. It's trains. It's metros, subways, trolleys even.
Oh, my
goodness. It's great. Come on. Just make
dig
it.
Dig out subway. Under Michigan. Big subway.
Exactly.
Huge subway.
Enormous.
Going under the lakes everywhere. Everywhere.
Think of all the money that could be made.
Make the lakes great again. Uh-huh. That's all I got to say about this. That's it. Yeah.
It does make our national Democrats look kind of... stupid, weak.
Oh
awful.
My god. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Especially considering just like the petty divides within as thin as the margin, cuz we have the Senate right now is 51-49, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pretty much the same thing that Minnesota had going on.
Right.
And they can't come together because they don't want to come together and get things done because they have weirder like political aims than they do. And this is again why it is so much more important to focus on your state legislature because they are going to change your lives. Like the Senate, obviously big ramifications for the country. They could do a lot of bad things and they can do some good things. But the things that happen in your state are going to be way more impactful, way quicker.
Yeah, like we know Marjorie Taylor Greene, we know Lauren Boebert, we know AOC, we know the kind of national figures that are sitting in the House and in the Senate are Joe Manchin's, Chuck Schumer's, etc. But the people that really make a big impact on your lives are the often overlooked races like state legislature, whether it's state House, state Senate, or even like your local officials. Those are the ones that could be, if they're good, they could be passing huge pieces of legislation to make your life just so much better. And it looks like that's what's happening in Minnesota. I mean, huge impact, right?
Sick. And it's pretty sick to see it getting some attention and some positive attention too. I haven't even really seen conservatives come and shit on this because like
they can't, right?
They fed the kids. can you believe they fed the kids? The only conservative angle that they have is like, oh, they're spending too much money. They don't have this money to spend. Mm-hmm. It's like they're feeding the kids.
Yeah. Or Ben Shapiro's take that, oh, well, a free school lunch wouldn't actually solve childhood hunger. It would though.
It would though because sure. You know, they can go and eat like they have two meals. It's
every
not
kid,
even just one.
Every kid's got to go to school. And you get two meals, warm meals in your bellies.
Come on, that's it. They get at least two out of the three meals.
Yeah.
You can't argue against that, right? And it's like the only other angle they have is like, oh, look, they didn't listen to the conservative voices who didn't want to feed the kids. what do you do? What do you do?
That's the kind of aggression I always want out of Democrats, is just ignore everyone who has bad ideas and move on.
Because
right?
It's perfect, because you shouldn't have to. Look, they're so intolerant. Oh, no.
Yeah.
The fallacy of intolerance. Well,
and it's because conservatives act this aggressive when they have trifectas
every
anywhere.
Time.
They'll do whatever they want. They will defy mandates from the Supreme Court to pass laws that hurt people.
Yeah.
So why don't we defy whatever conservatives say and pass laws that help people?
Yeah, now I'm going to need to see some sick obstruction from Democrats. Just start going crazy. Use all their tricks against them to get good things done.
Yeah. And we've kind of seen this with, I can't remember their name now, from Tennessee. Justin Pearson.
The Justins.
Yeah. They did everything they could to obstruct and they got kicked out, which was sick. Yeah. And now they're back now.
And then they got reinstated and they're doing cool things still.
Exactly.
Like it's going great. Like they need, we need these aggressive legislators.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Love to see it. Absolutely. But in other good news, speaking of enemies taking L's.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing.
Something I love to see. You know, people that are evil don't deserve good things, especially don't deserve positions of power. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, famous on this show for saying that he would defend sodomy laws if they went back in place.
I'm just doing my job. Just following orders.
Come on.
It's a classic response.
Classic Nuremberg.
Very defensible response.
He was just impeached by the Texas House of Representatives for bribery, disregard of official duties, abuse of public trust, misuse of office, and other charges related to corruption that center on his relationship with an Austin real estate investor, Nate Paul.
Nice.
So that's so cool, actually. The Texas House is made up of 101 Republicans and 49 Democrats, and Paxton was impeached with 121 yes votes and 23 no votes. That's at the very least 80% of Republicans voting to impeach this guy.
Yeah.
Like,
All the no votes were Republican.
Had to have been. Yeah. Had to have been. You cannot argue against that, right? And so now the investigation is going to move to the Texas Senate, where a two-thirds majority will be needed to remove him from office. And speaking of how you can't argue against all 80% of Republicans voting against him, Ted Cruz and Trump just announced their support for Paxton, claiming special interests in Austin are behind this political attack, despite the overwhelming support from conservatives.
Right, and conservatives outside of Austin, right?
Yeah, and it's like, just funny how they're framing this as like a political attack.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz came out and he's like, Ken Paxton for the last 9 years has been nothing but the most conservative attorney general throughout
Precisely.
The place. Exactly. Right. And that's kind of why these big national figures can't turn their back on Paxton, is because he's done so many of these culture war things. He's filed so many frivolous lawsuits for the movement that is conservatism, that if he does get impeached and removed from office and eventually, hopefully, formal charges brought against him for corruption, like formal
bribery,
felony corruption,
et cetera,
crazy, kind of devalues a little bit of the movement. You know what I'm saying? So that's really cool. And I just wanted to cover the little tidbits that have come out now and get into the weeds a little bit more once we find out some more about the case. All we really know right now is that he was trying to use public money to settle million dollar settlements for like private cases or some shit like that, or like cases against him. We had covered that. I think he was indicted for security fraud like 9 years ago, but no one ever did anything about it. So it'd just be cool to see the book get thrown at this guy, because he sucks.
Yeah, because he's evil, right?
Yeah.
I did see somewhere that if you get impeached, according to Texas law, that's immediate suspension. So I don't think he's in the position he's in the position, but he doesn't get to work.
Yeah, he doesn't work right now. Yeah. Right now, Abbott has to appoint like an interim AG.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, Abbott's going to appoint another demon.
Yeah, well, of course. And my immediate observation is like, if you got 80% of your own party, the Texas GOP, the strongest state GOP in the country, voting against you as the person who has been like the front man for the conservative crusade against every marginalized group in the country, or one of the best foot soldiers, you're chopped, right?
And
like they're the ones voting against you.
Oh, it's that. And then even worse, like I went on r/conservative earlier, just to see like what they were thinking about. I was like, are they going to say it's like political? No, every single one of them on r/conservative Reddit. Reddit.com/conservative was against Kent Paxton.
They must be
textbook corruption.
They must be seeing something serious, because like he does everything they want him to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. He's filing all these lawsuits against Biden for, I don't know, not killing trans people.
Yeah.
And then that blew my mind to see that he was getting impeached. That made me so happy.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I hope he suffers.
I hope he gets removed.
My enemies,
I hope they throw the book at him.
My enemies are ontologically evil, therefore any act against them is justified. Especially this. This is very justified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully the woke mob gets in and trans is his gender.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Just for the ultimate punishment. Yeah. A fate worse than death, as it were.
Basically. Basically.
I think as we end out this episode, you know what we have to do.
We have to give a special thanks to the people that keep the lights on here in the studio.
If you're listening to this post Wednesday, it's officially Pride Month. And that means it's illegal to be straight. If you're straight, it's 25 to life.
They're going to get you. They're going to get you. They're going to come lock you up. The woke mob.
I saw the Federalist put out, I don't know if it's the same like Federalist group that like does legal shit, like with the Supreme Court and stuff.
Some
group called the Federalist, I think it's the same, put out some article that it was like Pride Month is like enforced by the White House or something like that. It's like, all right, now come on.
Bro, honestly, government mandated gayness.
Yeah. Great. I just love
much.
But before we go, it's time to thank our patrons. So special thanks to Cricket Scrapbook Layouts, Nikki Nine Lives, Kaden Kraut, Lord T the Radiant, Chris the Postman, Christy Beck, Talia Katz, 40% Spite, Andrew Harris, Mike Chaplinski, Mattias T, Omar Zuno, Clayton LaFed, Mark Yeager, Sarah McRoberts, Dylan B. Kaz, Caleb Joy, Jim Bobs, Carl D. Rich Toro, Tari, Gavin Meyer Maldonado, Hunter W. Fergalaki, Max Vezquez, Jacob Rogers, Colton Mubari, Fixer Punk, Jim Egbers, Jeff Muzzy, Bagel Burrito, Cincy Alex, Brad, Joe Stenstrom, Adrian Sandoval, Chloe Sim 601, Colleen Cutts, Timothy Espinoza, Gregory Isn't My Name Very Yook, Jennifer DeVoe, Big Bird Titty, Crawfish, and Benneth Bennington III, Alexia Benanti, Nietzsche, Big Booty Beatdown, Moises T, Sam Maloney, Two Headed Boy,
Jeremy Cadwright, Ben Shapiro's Boyfriend, Jonathan Cassis, Luke O'Shea, Danielle Jackson, The Word of Microsoft, Jennifer Signs, Aaron and His Gundamn Gundams, Darth Father, Aiden Taylor, Corey Chambers, Sewer Snack, Ellie N, Heidi Osgood, John Glover, Weed Thief 69, Devin Hatchard, Retro Mondo, Meatball Minion, Emma the Dute Slayer, Claire McMillan, Breezy B, Elijah Murray, Veronica, a.k.a. V, Raccoon, Ash Smith, The Grootler, Magic Ian 95, Flower Clown, Jesper Hangaris, Beetlebugs, Three Crows in a Trench Coat,
oh, yeah.
Lonnie Rogers, Slavic and Sapphic, Casey Lynn Kelly, and Jeremy's mom for supporting the show on Patreon.
Thank you all so much. Thank you all for coming out to the live if you saw us there.
That's right.
If you didn't make it, I hope you can come to the next one whenever that is.
It'll be sometime.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty fun. I enjoyed it.
It was a good time. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Have a great week.